New morality began to gain real political power. Once the Catholics got an American pope, even the Vatican caved in. For several moments, all three of the women were silent. The cafeteria seemed to be waking up. There were more people coming in, more chatter and clatter as they lined up for their breakfasts before heading off to their jobs. Wonderly pushed her chair back from the table and stood up. "I've got to make a progress report to Dr. Urbane."
"And Manny?"
Cardenas asked. She shrugged. "I don't know. He can be, well, attractive, you know."
"Seductive," said Cardenas.
"Charming," Holly added.
"Like a snake."
Wonderly just shook her head and walked off, leaving her half-finished breakfast on the table.
"What do you think she'll do?"
Holly asked. Cardenas chuckled.
"She'll go to bed with him, but feel bad about it."
"That's brutal."
"Yep."
"Would you go to bed with him again?" Cardenas gave her a guarded look.
"Would you?"
Holly felt her lips curling upward into a rueful smile.
"Only if he asks me."
They both laughed.
"The son of a bitch is getting away with murder, all right," Cardenas said.
Suddenly serious, Holly said softly, "I wonder if somebody else has gotten away with murder."
"Huh? Who?"
"I don't know. I just wonder about Don Diego."
"You're still gnawing on that?
They didn't find anything wrong with him."
"Except that he drowned."
"But how could he drown?" Holly wondered. "How could a man fall into a few centimeters of water and drown himself?"
"He was pretty old," Cardenas said.
"But his health was fine. They didn't find any heart failure or any sign of a stroke."
"You think someone pushed him into the water and deliberately drowned him?"
The scene appeared in Holly's mind, every detail, just as she had seen it that day.
"I don't know.
Maybe."
"Who?
Why?" Holly shrugged. "I don't know. I wish I did."
Campaign speeches. The political debate was held in the Habitat's outdoor theater, a big concrete shell that curved gracefully to focus the sound waves produced on its stage out into the rows of seats set up on the grass. "It's a fairly good crowd," Eberly thought as he looked out over the audience. "Must be more than 1,000 out there, and a lot more watching by vid." Seated on the stage, 3 meters to his left, was Edouard Urbane, looking stiffly elegant in an old-fashioned dove-gray suit over a sky-blue turtleneck. Next to him sat Timoshenko, sour and gruff. He wore gray coveralls as a symbol of pride in his profession. Eberly thought he looked like a janitor. Eberly himself wore a charcoal dark tunic and comfortable slacks of lighter gray, true to the dress code he had promulgated. Wilmot stood at the podium in his usual tweed jacket and shapeless trousers, explaining the rules of the debate. "Each candidate will begin with a 5-minute summary of his position, to be followed by another 5 minutes apiece for rebuttal. Then the meeting will be opened to questions from the audience." Eberly kept himself from smiling. Viborg and Kananga had seeded the audience with dozens of supporters, each of them armed with questions that would allow Eberly to dominate the Q&A period. He had no intention of allowing Urbane or Timoshenko to say a single word more than absolutely necessary. "So without further ado, allow me to introduce Dr. Edouard Urbane, head of our scientific section," said Wilmot. He began reading Urbane's curriculum vitae from the display on the podium. "What a bore," thought Eberly. "Who cares what scientific honors he won in Quebec?" At last Urbane got up and went to the podium to the accompaniment of scattered applause. There are only a few scientists in the audience, Eberly realized. So much the better. He saw that Urbane limped ever so slightly. "Strange, I'd never noticed that before," he said to himself. "Is that something new, or has he always walked with a little limp?" Looking out over the audience, Eberly recognized several of his own people, including Holly and the stuntman Gaeta sitting in the front row. "Good, just as I ordered." Urbane cleared his throat and said, "As you know, I am not a politician. but I am a capable administrator, managing more than 100 highly individualistic scientists and their assistants, has been compared to attempting to make a group of cats march in step. He stopped, waiting for laughter. A few titters rose from the audience. Looking slightly nettled, Urbain went on. Allow me to show you how I have managed the scientific programs of this habitat. In this first image we see AVs. Eberly could hardly keep himself from whooping with glee. He's showing audio visuals as if this was a scientific meeting. The audience will go to sleep on him.
Holly felt distinctly uncomfortable sitting next to Gaeta, but Eberly had told her to bring the stuntman to the meeting, and she had followed his orders. Gaeta had smiled his best when Holly called him.
Go to the rally with you? I'm not much for listening to speeches.
Dr. Eberly has asked specifically that you come, Holly said to his image from the safety of her office. It would be a favor to him.
Eberly, huh? Gaeta mulled it over for a moment. Okay, why not? Then we can have dinner together afterward, okay?
Despite everything she knew about Gaeta, Holly wanted to say yes. Instead, I'm sure Dr. Eberly would like to have dinner with you.
No, I meant you, Holly.
I don't think I'll be able to.
Why not?
She wanted to say, because you've bedded every woman who's been able to help you, because you just think of me as a convenience, because you're an insensitive macho bastard, because I want you to care for me and all you care about is getting laid. But she heard herself say, well, maybe. We'll see.
From his seat on the stage, Eberly saw Urbain's audiovisuals in a weird foreshortening as they hovered in the air behind the speaker's podium. Urbain was explaining them in a flat, unemotional monotone. An organization chart, then some quick telescopic images of Titan that showed a blurry orange sphere. Urbain used a laser pointer to emphasize details that had no interest for Eberly, or the rest of the audience, Eberly thought. And the final holo, said Urbain. Eberly wanted to break into applause. What appeared in the three dimensions above the stage looked like a silvery gray tank. This is Alpha, said Urbain, his voice taking on a glow of pride. She will descend to the surface of Titan and begin the detailed exploration of that world, directed in real time by my staff of scientists and technicians. The tank lurched into motion, trundling back and forth on caterpillar treads, extending mechanical arms that ended in pincers or shovel-like scoops. Urbain stood to one side of the podium watching the machine, looking like a proud father gazing fondly at his child as it takes its first steps. Wilmot, who had been sitting in the first row, climbed the steps onto the stage and advanced to the podium. A very impressive demonstration, Dr. Urbain, but I'm afraid your 5 minutes are up, he said, his voice amplified for everyone to hear by the pin mic clipped to the lapel of his jacket. A grimace of disappointment flashed across Urbain's face, but he immediately turned off his palm-sized projector and made a smile for the audience. Thank you for your patience, he said, then turned and took his seat on Eberly's left. Not one person clapped his hands. Wilmot, at the podium, said, And now we have Mr. Ilya Timoshenko from the engineering department. Mr. Timoshenko was born in Orel, Russia, and took his degree in electrical engineering. Eberly tuned out Wilmot's drone and watched the crowd. There were lots of men and women out there who had also dressed in gray coveralls. My God, he realized, it's like a team uniform. And almost half the crowd is wearing gray coveralls. Timoshenko ambled up to the podium, nodding his thanks to Wilmot, and then looking out at the audience. He tried to smile, but on his dour face it looked more like a grimace. I won't need 5 minutes, he said, his voice rough, gravelly. What I have to say is very simple. Dr. Urbain says you should vote for him because he is a scientist. Dr. Eberly is going to tell you to vote for him because he's not a scientist. A few people laughed. I ask you to vote for me because I'm a working stiff, just as most of you are. I'm not a department head. I'm not a boss.